some of the biggest challenges maybe you faced as a priest, is it the changing times? Is it the way we did it and the way we do it now? And some of that may have gone into this.
Well, certainly I was ordained in 1967. The Vatican Council ended in 1965. And so like in the first 10 years of my priesthood, something changed every year. You know, like it's people don't realize it. When I was ordained, the Eucharistic prayer, or what we call the canon of the Mass, which is when we do the consecration prayers, was still in Latin. The offertory prayers, where we offer the bread and wine up to the Lord, were still in Latin. And there were three other prayers called the orations, were in Latin. The scriptures were all in English, and the prayers for the altar were in English. So it was half English, half Latin when I was ordained. I was ordained in May. In October, it all went to English.
Because?
Well, because they finally got the translation that Rome would accept. And so all of a sudden, I was praying in English, which was nice. It was more comfortable for me than the Latin, but I had practiced that Latin for 8 years, so I could say it effectively from the altar. Then the next thing that changed, I think, was we went from two scripture readings every Sunday to three. And that's when we moved to that Matthew, Mark, Luke thing, and we included now the Old Testament. And that introduced the Catholic Church to sections of the Old Testament we had never read in our churches before. And it really broadened our scriptural understanding. It was wonderful, that part. But it was an interesting challenge now because you had a whole other thing to preach about, you and all that. Then I think the next thing that changed was the structure of the prayers that began Mass and the prayers at the offertory and the prayers that ended Mass. Those changed. And then through the years, you got different translations. I think I've been through about six different versions in the 58 years I've been ordained. So that was always a challenge to readjust it. I remember the last challenge, it was 40 years between the changes. We had this new thing called the Roman Missal, and it's very nice now that I'm used to it. But one of the sisters that had worked with me was in retirement in her mother house. And on my Christmas card, because we started this new thing in the first Sunday of Advent, so on the Christmas card, she says, "How do you like the new approach to the liturgy?" So I wrote her back and I said, "Well, I used to pray. Now I read the words. Make sure I'm in the right place at the right time." But I'm over that now. But that happened so many times. That was always a challenge. Also, it was a huge challenge to make all of this comfortable for the people in the pew and help the transitions be easy and comfortable, and to make sense historically and theologically. It's a great challenge to present it in a way that it could be understood, and while maybe not liked, at least accepted as legitimate. And that took a lot of work.
Mm-hmm.
It took classes, it took sermons, it took attitude, it took all that kind of stuff.
Yeah.
And that was a huge challenge.
Since I'm unfamiliar, is there a homily at every Mass?
There can be, yes. And it's preferable that it is. On weekdays, it's about 3-4 minutes. On Sundays, it's probably about 20.
So in the course of a week, how many Masses will there be?
Well, every day.
Oh.
So Mass. Like at Holy Family, we have Mass at 7 and at noon, Tuesday, Wednesday, Thursday, Friday. We have Mass at 8 on Saturday morning and 5 on Saturday evening. And the Saturday evening is a Sunday Mass. Then there's Mass at 8, 10, 12, and 5 on Sunday.
Okay, why so many?
To get all the people in.
Okay,
it is. To make it available for the nurse that's working, the person, you know, because everybody doesn't, you know, isn't free on Sunday morning. That's just not real. You know, and so we have an obligation to go, so we have to make them available to go. But that was a huge change, because in the church I grew up in, you couldn't start Mass afternoon. So the latest Mass in your parish would be at usually 11 or 11:30. And then we introduced the Sunday night Mass. Part of that was because of what we call the Eucharistic fast. When I grew up, if you were going to go to communion, you had to fast from food and drink from midnight.
Wow.
So it would really be hard to do it to the 5 o'clock Mass on Sunday night if you'd been fasting from midnight to Saturday. So when that changed, then you could have Mass on Sunday night.
You said you felt that you have an obligation to go to Mass. Is that, did I misunderstand that?
It's a law of the Catholic Church that the Catholic is to attend the Eucharistic celebration every weekend, yes. It's a moral obligation of a Catholic to do that. Now, a lot of people don't do it because they don't understand the whys, but the law of the Church is, if you're a Catholic, you're supposed to attend Mass with your fellow Catholics and celebrate the Eucharist together every week.
Every week, right.
And on Sunday, the Lord's Day. Or Saturday night. One of the things about our liturgy is the reason we can have Saturday night Mass is because on great feast days, we always begin them the evening of the night before. It's part of our Jewish heritage of sundown the day before begins today. And we still have that in our liturgy.
The younger generation is coming along.
Mm-hmm.
And I think not just the Catholics, but all denominations face this, that they feel they're not as connected to the Church, that the Church doesn't really meet their needs. And so
and certainly the Church isn't going to tell me what I ought to do.
Right, right. And so there doesn't, and attendance too, overall, not just young people, has dwindled on all denominations.
Mm-hmm.
And so
it's not unique to any of us. It's across the board.
Right, right.
Yeah. That's starting to happen to the mega churches.
So is that something that the Church just accepts, or do you try to bring them back or make more attractive to them? Or what do we do?
Well, I can't tell you how many programs we have for what we call re-evangelization. Re-evangelization. Or returning Catholics or something of that nature. And probably every parish in the country has a program like that at least once a year. Then we also have a thing called, it used to be called RCIA, now it's called OCIA, Order of Christian Education. It's instruction classes on how to be a Catholic. And it runs from like the middle of August through till Easter. And it's an instruction class in what we believe as Catholics. And a lot of Protestants attend it, but an awful lot of non-practicing Catholics come through that program to look at it. Because, like they say, the last time I went to religion class was in the eighth grade at Rosary School, or the last time I went to religion class was at Bishop McGinnis High School or Cashel Hall, and I have never addressed the Church intellectually as an adult. And that's what those classes are about. And they do wonders for reinvigorating fallen away. You call them fallen. I love it. It used to be ex-Catholics, or you were a fallen away Catholic, or you were a former Catholic. Now the term is very interesting, and I kind of laugh when I hear it. I was raised Catholic.
Mm-hmm.
I was raised Catholic. They don't say, I'm not a Catholic anymore. I was raised Catholic. It's a funny thing. But those classes, they go on in every parish every year. There's something to reinvigorate. But so oftentimes, the reason the person has gone away from the Church is because they've been married three times. Mm. We are somewhat serious about our sacrament of matrimony. And we take that very seriously. And so if you have been married in the eyes of the Church, and you end up in a divorce, you have to go through what we call an annulment process, and a lot of people don't like that.
So people quit going to church.
Yeah.
You're probably, I'm not going to say driven, but anyway, there's probably a vast majority of your loss of attendees is because of that.
A lot of it has to do with marriage, yes, and a lot of it has to do with a lot of it in then today's world has a lot to do with feminism, because we still don't have ordained priests as women.
Right.
We still believe that family is male and female. We still believe that as you are created is as you should be, and you don't go and make an adjustment to your body because you want to.
LGBTQ is
yes,
what we're talking about.
We don't fit in there very comfortably at all. And so if you have people that are dealing with that trauma and dealing with that reality in their lives, they often aren't comfortable in Catholicism. Although Catholicism, in many ways, is much more gentle about that than a lot of other churches. So we would never say you can't come to church. We would never say you aren't part of us. We'd never say that. In fact, the Catholic Church says once you're baptized, you can't get out, you're ours.
Right.
We don't let go. They might flee the coop, but we don't cut the cord.
Are those issues going to have to be dealt with in the future, like females in leadership? Do you think that'll ever be addressed?
Well, I think the females in leadership is very much a huge adjustment in the Catholic Church at the moment. I think it's interesting that Pope Leo, in his what they call dicastery that he was in charge of in Rome, that was the one that determined who would be the next bishops. They feeded all that. On his staff were three nuns.
Really?
Mm-hmm. And he has said they were immensely, immensely valuable in his evaluations and his decisions. He has great respect for them. It would not surprise me greatly if he puts one of those in charge of that dicastery. Dicastery is like the organization that determines who becomes the next bishop someplace.
Oh.
And then there's a dicastery for education and a dicastery. We'd call them committees or something. But in the Catholic Church, we have to have our own term. We can't just use anybody's term.
Okay.
I'm sure dicastery comes out of some Latin term that has to do with it.